Hey, this is Steve Bloom, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me today is the writer extraordinaire, Hard Candy Mandy. Hello. Oh, Jesus. Movie Revolt Dan, hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Not too bad. And Mr. Fridley Son.
Yeah, I'm on this one.
You're on this one. And today we are bringing you a movie review of the latest in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's right, we're talking about Captain Marvel. You've heard the rest, now hear the best. I don't know what number of Marvel film is this, Dan.
21, I believe.
21. All right, the 21st film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and we're going to be giving you our thoughts on that, as well as some spoiler talk, and maybe check your guys' anticipation level for Avengers after seeing this one. So let's just go into it, Amanda, with your feelings as you were headed towards this one. What was kind of your anticipation level for Captain Marvel?
I expected it to be pretty bombastic and have like a ton of nostalgia and just be this rock out girl power movie that I was going to have a ton of fun with to set up this amazing ultimate character that we're going to be seeing more of in Endgame. And really, that's what it turned out to be, is a huge fucking setup movie.
All right. Dan, what was your anticipation level and what was your initial reaction to this one?
I don't know what my full anticipation was. I wasn't really in love with a lot of the trailers per se. I would think my biggest anticipation was just seeing how Brie Larson was going to be able to take on the role of the character and like how what exactly they were going to do with it. And I thought that's where its biggest success was with Brie Larson and in the creation of the character of Captain Marvel and what it means moving forward. So I ended up walking out relatively happy compared to my expectation level.
Same question to you, Matt. What was your anticipation level and your first reaction?
Oh, boy. My anticipation level was probably extraordinarily high. Captain Marvel and before that Mrs. Marvel is the only one I could think of all of these Marvel movies that, like, those were the comics I've subscribed to. Like, I don't get Captain America or Iron Man. And actually, the time I got Avengers was the Mighty Avengers, when she was actually the leader of the Avengers. So, I had a lot of history with this character, so I had a really high hopes for finally seeing her on the big screen. I wasn't upset when I came out of that theater.
All right, excellent. So, Dan, you brought up the whole Brie Larson and kind of if she was going to be able to pull it off or not. So let's just jump off with that. Amanda, how do you feel like Brie Larson did in the role, and how did you like the character specifically?
I mean, I don't have any of the source material to base her off of, so I don't really, you know, I can't speak to that end of it. But I think her in this character was a good fit. I think that I liked her humor and her style and her vibes, but I also found myself like really wanting to be her. Like, dude, you are so cool in every situation. Like, you just go into that knowing that you can just punch anybody's face out of existence, and that can make you pretty cocky and like make you think you can just pull off anything, and you probably can. So I wish I had that kind of confidence, but I also wish I could punch anybody's face into oblivion that I wanted.
Matt, for those that pay attention to film Twitter or listen to, you know, movie review podcasts and whatnot, you've probably heard some of the talk about her character. Some people complaining that it might be a little bit too deadpan, too cardboard, things like that. Other people that really appreciated her humor and kind of the sarcasm in her jokes and some of her lines, etc. How do you feel like it all boiled down for you for Brie Larson?
Oh man, so I here's the thing, I don't know that I've ever had a movie where I'm like, oh man, I don't really know if I think that character is like that. So I don't know if I'm the best person to ask this. I had no problems. Like
As someone though that believed, like, has a lot of source material to back, like you've read comics on her, you know, you have a lot of history. Like, did it fit like your vision of what that character was in your mind?
Well, whether to the detriment or benefit of the character, she's been written by so many different authors. She's definitely hit one of those authors' vision. like, I thought it worked in the movies. I was not watching it going like, ah, I wouldn't believe that she'd react like that, or like, she's not responding normally. I thought it was fine. I thought her character choices were great and totally fitting.
Excellent. Another thing that I've heard, Dan, is that some people were upset because they felt like she wasn't the star of the show. Some people saying that Sam Jackson stole it from her, or some of the other side characters. I don't know if I buy that one. I thought she was pretty magnetic when she was on screen. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think she worked well with Samuel L. Jackson, and he had his role to play. But I think the movie was her film. It was her story. Like, everything really plot-wise, narrative-wise, was supporting that, and, you know, thematically aligned to kind of bolster her character. So, yeah, I don't necessarily think anything really stole her thunder, maybe supported it a little bit. I think, you know, overall her performance was pretty solid. Like, I've read a decent amount of Captain Marvel books, and like Matt mentioned, like, she doesn't, to me, like, have a definitive personality per se. It's not like I think that's what I was really looking forward to, is like, I thought this movie could help really define it a little bit, because it has differed depending on who writes her. And sometimes she's a bit more authoritative. Sometimes she's just, you know, written like more like Captain America. Sometimes she's written more like Tony Stark. And I thought this did a good balance of, in just kind of letting Brie Larson take the role. She's very measured in her responses. She has a different type of personality. Honestly, like, the word that comes to mind is weird. She's weird, but like in a good way, which makes sense. You know, she's legitimately an alien, kind of, in a way. And I think too that, like, there's a little bit more nuance with the way she takes on the character than, you know, I love all the other performances in the MCU, but you can pretty much really define who they are. Their personalities are pretty drastic, like a Tony Stark, this snarkiness, you know, Captain America, the nobleness. I guess Thor, depending on, you know, if it's Ragnarok, Thor, or what have you. But I thought with her, she's a little bit of everything in a way. And I think, considering that, you know, she might be the main focus moving forward, it makes sense, because she can kind of adjust and fit the situation really well. So I don't necessarily, she's the type of personality like a Tony Stark that's going to walk in the room and take it over, but she'll assess it and be able to kind of snipe and have those like callbacks, and she'll hold her own, but she doesn't necessarily feel the need to call attention to herself, which I thought was a little bit different.
Yeah, I agree. Another thing I really liked about Captain Marvel in this film as a character is that so many times when we have a character that is finding their own, figuring out who they are, not necessarily coming of age, but somewhat coming into their own identity, a lot of times in movies we get that ongoing like internal strife and broodiness, and the fact that they're constantly struggling with what side are they on, or who they are, or this, that, and the other. And I appreciated that this movie, for a lot of, it was a lot more subtle with that. I felt like she was who she was from the beginning. And I liked that she wasn't necessarily dealing with a lot of like internal turmoil, so to speak. Like, you can see that even in like some of the first act sequences where she's training and whatnot. Like, she from the get-go does not want to hold back. She doesn't want to restrain herself. She doesn't want to, you know, she wants to let her abilities and powers fly, for lack of a better term. So I kind of appreciated that, because I think that would have brought the film down a little bit if she was always struggling with her decisions. And she was much more impulsive and trusting her gut and trusting her instincts. At least that's what I kind of came across with from the movie. Amanda, what did you feel?
Yeah, I think that since her origin was not just kind of thrown at us immediately, like, we kind of had to work our way into that. We had to, you know, just kind of feel her and her intentions out. So I think that it definitely worked for me trying to, you know, decide if I was on her side or not. But trying to figure out whose side everybody else was on was the confusing part.
Before we get to that, going back to you, Dan, speaking of the first act, since we kind of brought that up, I know in some initial thoughts, even my own, that I felt like maybe the first act was the weakest part of the film, and that I didn't start having a lot of fun until later on in the movie. I don't know if it was the number of places that we were visiting, or some of the flashback sequences or whatnot, but it felt like for me it took a little while for the movie to kind of gain its footing. How did you feel about the first act and some of the pacing through that and going through there?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the challenge of the story you're telling when you have this amnesic aspect where things are purposely being hidden from her. So with that, it's, I think, limited in what it can do without kind of tipping its hand a little bit too much. So I did think it was a little bit murky and trying to find its footing a little bit. Also, especially like the first really bigger action sequence, the one that's on is to go and like investigate this alien planet, I thought was just did not it looked really bad, honestly. Like the setting, the staging of it, and the CGI, I thought overall for the film wasn't fantastic. There were some good moments. I mean, the aging technology was pretty impressive, and I feel like they spent so much money on that that some of the bits like the opening sequence weren't necessarily great. It didn't necessarily wow you, but I think I do wonder if, like, going back and rewatching it, you'll just notice a few more things, because it you know, there's a lot of foreshadowing, and there's a lot of foreshadowing that we don't have much context for. So I wonder, with that context, if it would be an improvement. But at first go around, it's a little shaky.
Matt, what did you feel about that opening kind of war battle sequence, or any of the kind of pre-Earth stuff that you got in the first act of the movie?
I really liked that first bit, if only because it shows you just how, like, scary the Skrulls are, right? Like, you know, it's like this, they can be anyone, they can be anywhere, and now they can read minds, and, like, I liked that storyline-wise. I do think there was some weirdness in there, though. Like, there was, like, this quality of, like, can they talk to each other? Can't they talk to each other? Because it seemed like some characters could hear other characters, but then other characters couldn't hear each other. And I don't know. I had a bunch of little things like that where it's like, well, what about this part? Like, why was Jude Law not blue? Everyone was blue but Jude Law.
Yeah, what was up with that?
Why is he not blue?
I don't have
an answer. I think they were showing that, like, my assessment, because on that train, is that, you know, there's a mixture of different, like, some Kree are blue, some are not, you know, because there's the, I can't think of his name, but he was in Guardians of the Galaxy, who wasn't
Ronan?
Blue either. Oh, Ronan, well, yeah, Ronan, but, like, so I think similar to how the Asgardians have, you know, different ethnicities, my assumption is that that's what it was trying to show as well, but.
You're talking about Korath, the, maybe? Hansu? German Hansu?
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else, any thoughts about, you know, kind of those early on sequences with Brie Larson training with Jude Law or anything?
Honestly, I wanted more of her on the Kree planet. Like, I wanted to get more of the setup. Like, why should we want her to be on their side?
Okay. Well,
you know, why is she, or, you know, set up more of why she is so quick to turn against them, even though she's been with them for 6 freaking years, and they, like, took her in. Like, give us something more to help decide, like, to give us a reason to pick either side, really, or to back her on her decision.
Matt or Dan, any reactions to that, or any other thoughts about life on Kree?
I do like the fighting sequence and what it sets up for later in the movie. Like the herd and Jude Law training and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciated that, especially the like I said, the bits where it shows that she's not willing to kind of constrain her powers and just blast him across the room. Like, I thought that was a good moment, for sure. Dan, any other thoughts before we kind of move on to Earth?
Yeah, I think what it did do well, though, is just show that she has a character has a lot of uncertainty right from the get-go, you know, showing that she, you know, clearly doesn't know a lot of things. She's, you know, there's a lot of you know, the how they utilize the Supreme Intelligence, which I was kind of hoping we would see the in the comics. This is a gigantic floating head. Well, I was hoping that would eventually happen, but they could still do that in the future. But I thought, though, I thought that was really successful. And like Matt mentioned, how it did set up the little rivalry between Jude Law and Captain Marvel or Carol Danvers or Ver. I think that
called her.
Fierce. But yeah. So.
Okay. So obviously we then transition to a crash landing on Earth, or I forget the code name that they called it in the movie, something, a letter call signer.
See, it's like numbers and letters.
Yeah, planet something, something, something. But so obviously the movie takes place in the 90s, and we get a big dose of that as they crash through a blockbuster as our first like sequence into what we're going to be transitioning to, with it, which is the action on Earth. How did you guys feel like the 90s references, cues, you know, whether it be musical or visual, like how do you think they handled that? Was did they show enough restraint? Was it too many? Or what did you think about those types of things, Dan?
I do think it was a mixed bag, to be honest. I thought the music at times was worked, but I thought like the need to put her in grunge clothes was maybe a step unnecessarily too far. But you know, I think they certainly leaned in a little bit to the 90s. I was surprised. I was waiting for more of a Pulp Fiction callbacks or references, but there wasn't really as many. So I thought it was fine. Like it,
except for his hairline.
Yeah, true. I did think though they got some good gags out of it, especially when it came to like technology and stuff like that. But they, you know, I guess you could argue that they maybe leaned a little too heavily on it.
I was worried at first because just with the initial thing being right into the blockbuster, I'm like, oh my goodness, we're about to be overloaded with 90s stuff. And I felt like they kind of like pulled back immediately after that and kind of calmed down a little bit. I did appreciate, like you're talking about the internet joke or the file loading joke or whatever it was, and some of those things and some of the musical cues later on. I was worried at first, but I thought they handled it better than I was thinking they were going to. Amanda, did you appreciate it? Or did you pick up on any other 90s references that you liked?
Yeah, looking back on it now, I can't even hardly remember any others besides those couple. Like the pager thing and, you know, the payphone, the blockbuster, that kind of thing. But other than, like, the songs and her clothes, there really wasn't much at all. And I wanted more just because that's my favorite nostalgia stuff is the 90s, so of course I wanted more. I didn't need it to be, you know, corny, but I wanted a little bit more just so I could see life back then, you know what I mean? So it was, I wanted to see more life on Kree, but I also wanted to see more life in the 90s of an alien crash landing here.
You want a 40-hour Captain Marvel movie.
Yes. She needed another hour at least. Matt, what did you think of any of that stuff that we brought up?
I'm the exact same age as Amanda. Like, our birthdays are less than a month apart, right? Or no, they're, like, 5 months apart. And, like, so, like, I was rocking every reference they were doing. Like, I had no complaints with that. I thought they did a good job of giving her some flannel and then taking it away.
Like, take off that flannel. I'm like, I like the flannel.
I do agree that it's felt really weird that like she's in this like, you know, armored bodysuit, and then she looks at a mannequin in a window, and then we just cut to her wearing grunge gear, and like it's like where did her regular clothes go, but then they're back later. I mean, it's just another one of those questions that I have, like, oh, what about
she have a Mary Poppins bag? Like, where was that shit? Did she have it underneath that? Like,
maybe it sucks into really a wristband.
Yeah.
It's like when Optimus Prime transforms. You don't know where the trailer went. I had to do that. All right. So obviously once we get to Earth, we are introduced to some more characters that we're going to have along with the ride, you know, for the rest of the way. We get Samuel L. Jackson, which we briefly mentioned. We get Ben Mendelsohn as Keller or Talos, and a few other things. So Dan, how did you feel like those characters added to the film? What did you like or dislike about the cast that we get once we're on Earth?
I thought the cast was pretty strong, honestly, and I'm, you know, a huge Ben Mendelsohn fan. I think he's done a lot of great work. He does have a tendency to, and I don't know, are we doing any type of spoilers? I don't want to, like...
I mean, we could maybe save some of them for a little bit.
Okay, but I'll just say I like the direction of his character and where it went, and the more we got from him, I thought the better it actually became. Like I mentioned earlier, I thought Samuel L. Jackson and Brie Larson, like, I guess you could, they became a little bit chummy really quickly, but I was kind of glad, like, I was glad that, you know, when she comes to Earth, there's, like, debate, is she really crazy, is she not, and I was worried that that was going to be, like, the major focus was her trying to convince him and everything, but the fact that they dealt with that immediately, I thought was the right move, and I do like, too, like, they seem to be building a lot of, possible things for the future. And I thought too, the actress that kind of, you know, stole the show or was my biggest surprise was Lashana Lynch, who played Maria Limbeau in her relationship with Carol Danvers. I thought that was probably the emotional core in the direction of her character and how it, again, kind of furthered the theme of this, you know, going against the norm and breaking against kind of the societal restraints that are often put upon people. I thought how that her character supported that was a welcome surprise. And so, and again, sets a lot up for the future without, I think, being too overt with it. So, yeah, I think Marvel movie strength is that they do tend to have pretty solid casts. And I would, that look, that's any different here.
Absolutely. Matt, speaking of Samuel Jackson, obviously 25 years, de-aged, I guess you could say, that they did with that. How did you feel that worked in his interactions with Captain Marvel as kind of being the main person that is she's going to play off of?
I had, you know, again, maybe I'm not, I don't have the best eyes for this. I had no problem with Sam Jackson or Coulson, like Clark Gregg. Like, yeah. I thought they both totally fit. They're both very believable. So like that worked for me.
Yeah, I didn't have any problems with it either. I was just buying it on lock sync. Amanda, there was a cat in this film. What do you feel about the cat?
The frugler?
No, there wasn't.
That's not a cat. I liked the cat jokes. I thought it was pretty funny. I dug it. I think Fury was a little over the top of the cat, but I also, you know, think that was part of his shtick in this one. So it worked. It was really the only relationship that I bought besides Captain Marvel and Nick Fury in the entire film.
Speaking of the cat, Dan, how did the humor overall work for you in this film? You know, was it dispersed in good doses? Did most of the jokes work for you? How did you feel that was as far as an aspect of the film?
I thought it was pretty good. I don't, you know, it had a pretty good ratio, and there wasn't really any jokes. I rolled my eyes at a little bit. I did love the use of the scrolls in this, and speaking of 90s, the Stan Lee cameo I thought was pretty fantastic. One of the best with MCU, especially considering I guess it's not a spoiler because Kevin Smith talked about it already, that, you know, the callback to Mallrats, and we're doing the Kevin Smith retrospective. It seemed a little fitting. But I think humor is pretty solid. It's definitely, you know, it's the same type of humor we've seen with MCU. A lot of family friendly, a lot of broad strokes. But I thought when it came to Brie Larson, her sense of humor really, I think, rang the truest and was the most unique that we've seen in MCU, at least this is the way she delivered a lot of her kind of, you know, she wasn't hitting the home, you know, she's not having these huge soliloquies or anything like that compared to like a Tony Stark. But I thought, you know, the way that she would have her kind of snarky comebacks were pretty effective.
Matt, what did you think about the humor? Did any jokes really work for you well? Any kind of fall flat, or was it kind of even all the way across?
So like I said, I've been a fan of Captain Marvel for years. So the whole Flerken thing I thought was real good. I thought they did a good job. I liked the levels of humor that Mendo put into this. Like, I thought he was great, and I thought he was one of the funnier characters, which I didn't expect. Like, if you told me, if you told me that the Skrull was going to be one of the funniest characters in the movie, I don't know that I would have bought it. I'd been like, well, this sounds like they're going to do Skrulls right. and they did Skrulls differently, but I don't think they did Skrulls wrong, so.
They look like sand people at one point. Like, when did the sand people get here?
Sand people?
Like, yeah, when they're on that planet and they first get there, and they like they're all like dressed in these like burlap like shroud things. You know what I'm talking about, Kevin?
Yeah, I can see what you're saying there. Before we get too much further, because if we go any more into the plot and kind of where we go from here, I guess it would contain some spoilers. So let's hold off on that. Let's kind of just do a little bit of a summary of kind of our overall thoughts, and then we'll kind of take a quick break and dive in a little bit deeper. So, you know, after you guys saw this, a lot of people are redoing their Marvel rankings. People are trying to, you know, decide for them where this kind of falls, how much they liked it in comparison with those other films, and kind of what kind of mood it put them for the Avengers film coming up. as far as like how it did at the box office and Rotten Tomatoes, I mean, so far at the box office, still fairly early on, but it's right now in the 13th spot in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but probably not a fair ranking since it's, like I said, still early on. It's at 266 million already for the domestic. And Rotten Tomatoes wise, as far as how it ranks amongst the whole group, and this is just the critics score, we're not going to talk about the user score at this point, although it has climbed way back up, but the Rotten Tomatoes, it's ranked 16th out of the 21. So 16th on Rotten Tomatoes and right now 13th on box office gross. Amanda, how did you like it in comparison with a lot of the other Marvel films, and what kind of anticipation level did it leave you for Avengers?
I definitely made me more excited for Avengers Endgame, just as now we have like the spark of hope to like get things back on track for them, because it was so bleak of an ending to the last Avengers installment. This movie, though, just felt like a total setup film the whole time, and I did, you know, just like waiting the whole time for the most awesome stuff to happen, and then the awesome stuff kicked in, and then it was over super quick. So I needed a little bit more from everything that I got.
So kind of a lukewarm reaction for you?
Yeah.
Dan, what about you?
I just really should say it's a setup film, because I didn't really get that really at like, I didn't feel like there was much. I think that was something I thought was refreshing, that it wasn't really tied much into the Avengers stuff, and except for the fact that it was Captain Marvel, and we had, like, a reference to the Infinity War stuff. So I thought it was a little bit, you know, by setting it in the 90s, it was able to kind of be separate and not have to, similar to, like, you know, some of the other, like the Steve Rogers Captain America First Avenger, like, it similar to that, where it was able to be its own unique thing. I thought it was better in the smaller moments. It was a better story than most of the MCU stuff, but I thought when it came to the bigger stuff, like Amanda mentioned, like when it came to the action, it was fine. It wasn't its strength, and which I thought was the right move to make, because I think ultimately the goal for this was, you want to make Captain Marvel into the hero, to the character, you know, people would clamor for, and I thought it did a good job at doing that successfully. As an entertainment blockbuster, it was okay. You know, it wasn't necessarily, like, there's not a lot of amazing action sequences that I'm going to go back and say, like, that's set a high bar for Marvel. They were adequate. They did the job, but they never overstayed their welcome, which I thought was a, you know, sometimes with the MCU films or even, you know, any blockbuster, they maybe get overly extended and go on for too long. I think they kind of held back a little bit, which I think too was partially by design, partially because I'm still not sure if I know how they're defining her powers or not, but I don't know. I like, for me, it's like a mid-tier MCU film. Like, I have it around where I ranked it's like 12th or so, around where I have like Spider-Man Homecoming and the Hulk, Ant-Man, and the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So it's outside of the top 10 for me, but I thought, you know, it's, I think, better than some comparing it to other origin films. Like, I thought I enjoyed it more than Doctor Strange, but not as much as like Black Panther. So even though like Black Panther isn't technically an origin, I don't know.
That's true. Matt, what about you? Is it, you know, top half, bottom half, somewhere in the middle for Marvel films? And kind of what was your overall take on the film as you've had time to think about it?
Oh boy. So it's probably right around the middle, and I know that's not the most satisfying answer you could give. Like, I don't know. I'm not great at comparing it. It does everything it needs to do, right? Like, it sets up this character, establishes how she got her powers so that we know if she needs to lose them, how she's going to lose them, and what her powers are, kind of. Like, there could have been a little bit more of that. But for the most part, it establishes this character and what motivates them. So like, it does what it needs to do. It doesn't do anything super crazy good. So like, I would, like, it's right in the middle. Like, I think, Dan got it right when he said it's probably above, Doctor Strange and below Black Panther.
All right. I'm with you guys. For me, it's definitely not in the top echelon of Marvel films. I don't know if it's in the middle or maybe the just teetering on the side of the bottom tier, but probably in the middle for me as well. I just thought it took too long to get to the stuff that I was interested in, and I had some other problems that we'll get to kind of once we get into the spoilers. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into a little bit more in depth as to what happens in the second half of Captain Marvel and kind of take the handcuffs off and talk about it free. So stick with us. We'll be right back. All right.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
Hey guys, it's Optimus Solo and
Hard Candy Mandy.
And we just wanted to let you guys know about another podcast out there that we both think you would all enjoy.
It's one of both of our favorite shows to listen to, and it's none other than the True Bromance podcast.
True Bromance is a movie podcast hosted by longtime friends Hiro and Barry, and if you like to smile, laugh, and just be genuinely entertained while listening to movie talk, then this is definitely the right show for you.
Each week, the guys break down a recently released movie, and not only do they tie in the movie that week to the beers that they are drinking during the show,
but they also tie it in to a real fun top and bottom five list associated with that movie.
It's a blast hearing both sides of these lists, and it definitely makes them unique amongst all other movie review podcasts.
So we definitely want to recommend all of you guys to go check out their show. Just search out the True Bromance Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and all other podcast platforms. And if you listen via iTunes, do us a favor and leave them a 5-star review. And don't forget to let them know that the Cinema Geeks sent you.
Now back to the show. Do you see how your patience paid off?
Hey, thanks for sticking with us. We're going to talk a little bit spoilers and some further discussion on Captain Marvel or Marvel. Dan, what do you want to get into as far as any spoiler talk or anything that you thought that worked or didn't work with Captain Marvel?
I thought one of the things that I thought really worked that I was really surprised by, which isn't always super common when it comes to an MCU film, is that how they utilize the Skrulls in their story. Like, I figure Jude Law, he's probably going to end up being evil or, you know, being the bad guy. But how they utilize the Skrulls, it's kind of the sympathetic, you know, characters of kind of being mistreated, like, you know, almost like a refugee story. I wasn't expecting it to go to that level. I was perhaps hoping maybe a little bit that there'd be a little bit more depth there so that they, maybe they're, you know, there's some innocence, but they're also, you know, it's a little bit more complicated than that. And maybe that will be something they get into in future films, because the Skrulls are great villains, as Matt mentioned. Like, they can be ultra scary with their ability to kind of mimic anything. So hopefully they don't lose that altogether. But I thought just using them in, again, talking about how this was a movie about kind of fighting against the restraints of society and how that played into it was pretty effective. So I did think that was one of the bigger strengths of it. Perhaps the utilization of, like, the Tesseract. I don't know if that was necessary. And I'm still not really sure. I guess I'm still kind of confused about, like, how she got her powers. It wasn't super important, per se. It was just, I like the act of it, her doing it through sacrifice. But because it wasn't the Tesseract that gave her powers. It was something else, to my understanding. Outside of that, the thing that really stood out to me was the Skrulls.
Before we get to her powers a little bit, let's talk a little bit more about the Skrulls. And I gotta admit, I had like a dumb moment because Ben Mendelsohn is playing the part of Fury's boss, Keller, and one of the Skrulls named Talos. It took me until almost the end of the film to realize that Ben Mendelsohn was playing both characters. I don't know why.
Really?
I didn't realize he was also playing the Skrull version. I'm like, oh, they got two different actors to play this. That's like kind of ingenious. I was like, why did they get Ben Mendelsohn for such a small part? That color guy was only on the screen for a little bit. I don't know if it's because I've never seen Ben Mendelsohn play a role like this. Like, he was hilarious to me and definitely, like, a lot more comical and relaxed, I felt like, as Talos. I don't know if I'm saying that name right or not either. But so I was like, that was the one mystery that I guess got me in this film, because I did not realize those were both being played by the same person.
I know immediately as soon as I heard his voice.
I didn't. I'm dumb. Matt, what did you feel like as far as the Skrulls and obviously the ability to add this into the mix with all their shape-shifting mystery, et cetera? And how did it play with like some of the source material and stuff you know about Skrulls from the comics?
Oh man, it they made the Skrulls less of like the how evil are the Skrulls in the regular Marvel universe, you say? At one point, Professor X and Black Bolt, you don't know those guys, but they'll well, you don't know Black Bolt, but he'll show up someday, I'm sure. Teleport to like the Skrull Armada and blow up the King's ship unannounced and for no reason, and then teleport back to Earth. That was a comic book that happened once, because Skrulls are evil, and they're always evil, and they're the worst.
Well, actually, Black Bolt was in that awful Inhuman TV show, but we'll forget that ever existed. So.
Oh, no. Boy, oh, boy. Jeez. Like, it's, they're like, they're I don't know of a storyline where the Skrulls are ever good guys. Like, they're always the evil, sinister, sneaky, duplicitous types. And you know what? Like, that would have been an easy play right now, right? The idea of you can't trust your neighbor who is working for the betterment of society and all that. Like, that is, I mean, it could have been a really timely and easy-to-do storyline and probably easy to do really well. And they didn't go with that. And instead, we've got Skrulls that are supposedly likable and nice, and they little baby Skrulls.
And Skrull Science Officer. I don't remember what his name was, but he was good, too. Matt, I want you to get a chance to react to the other part that Dan was talking about with Captain Marvel and how she's getting her power and things related to that. How do you think that worked, or was that a mystery to you as well?
Yeah, man, it really seemed like... they're like, yeah, this engine's powered by something somewhere else, and that's the Tesseract. And then when she blew it up, now the Tesseract's powering up her. But, like, we all know that thing gets crushed in a dude's hand later, she still has powers. So it's just one more of those questions that, like, I'm not trying to be like, hey, I got all these questions, and it's bad. It's like, I just got all these questions, and I have them.
Right. Amanda, how did you think about that? What did you interpret as far as her power went, or how did you?
Well, also there was some blood transfusion that we never saw. That would have been really dope to see a blue blood transfusion.
We'll get more into that.
Jude Law.
Another thing about this film that kind of caused me to have one of the biggest problems I have with it. On one hand, it's stuff that I really like about the film, but then on the other hand, it has one glaring problem with it. But something that this film seems to be wanting to do is tackle the themes of trust or identity or even like this air of mystery, because we have obviously Captain Marvel is trying to determine what side of the battle or war or what side of this conflict that she should be on, you know, whether she's part of this Kree identity that she's been with, you know, for the last however many years, whether she's, you know, gonna be friends to the Skrulls, whether she's gonna, how she's gonna deal with the human interactions, etc. So you have that kind of pull back and forth. Obviously, very blatant, you have the shape-shifting ability of the Skrulls, so you can't trust who's who. You don't know who's, you know, real and who's been shape-shifted in, you know, by a Skrull to make us thrown off from that standpoint. And as an audience, I guess we're supposed to be trying to figure out who's good and who's bad as well. And on surface, I like all of those things, but isn't it problematic when you're doing that and then one of your sides is the Kree, who we know from watching other Marvel films are evil right off the get? Like, I don't, like, that bothered me a little bit.
They're not necessarily evil. Only Ronan was evil. The Kree, I mean, they were... by the time Guardians, you know, is around and stuff like that, they're not. They have factions of them that are evil, but it was not them as the entire race. Like,
but I mean, have we seen the good? Have we seen? Maybe I'm just, since I haven't rewatched all the Marvel films, maybe I'm just missing stuff. But the only Kree that I remember seeing in these films was the bad version. Did we see good versions?
technically in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but again, people pretend that it wasn't. Yeah, and in Guardians in the first one, because when you think of Ronin, like, it was him, but his army wasn't all Kree. It was, he utilized other type of creatures, actually some creatures that were from like Planet Hulk back when that was a thing. So
okay,
them as like a military force, it wasn't necessarily. They're a little bit more ambiguous, I think, in the current universe compared to what they've become.
Okay.
In this.
So. I guess I was only remembering Ronan. And speaking of which, is that a character that was needed in this film at all?
See, I think if they can make Ronan into an interesting character, like, he is a good character in the comics. It does seem, based upon that, we'll get more of him, possibly more movies. There can be, you can make him into something more compared to like the one note awfulness he was in Guardians. And I think the next Captain Marvel movie is supposed to take place before she comes back to Earth in Infinity War. So my guess is we'll possibly see him again. Okay. It's not like this performance here at all changed. It's like, oh, look how amazing in it he is. but he was better in small doses. I'll say that.
I love his look. I love the character design of him. I think he looks like a complete badass, and I want him to be a cool character. But, like, I couldn't help but think of, after the film was over, like, if you take him out, did it change a single thing about this film? And I don't think it does. So the only purpose he could be in there was to maybe plant some seeds that would be later explored. I guess I didn't know that they were going to do another Captain Marvel film in, like, pre-Avengers, because I'm like, he's saying that he's going to search the universe for this weapon and for this, you know, for Captain Marvel. But I'm like, but he's dead. Like, I'm like, how is that ever going to happen? Because he's dead, and we already know that Captain Marvel is back on Earth. So did they have an interaction that we're just never going to see? That was like one of my biggest questions. Like, what was the purpose of putting him there unless you're going to explore that? And I guess I didn't think about the timeline.
She's got to go somewhere before Endgame. Like, she's got to be somewhere.
Yeah, but I just thought we weren't gonna get. I thought we weren't gonna get that, because I thought we were just gonna kind of bounce right to, like, based on the end credit scene, that we're just gonna bounce to her being on Earth, and it's like, well, did you ever have an interaction with that Ronan guy again?
Well, and to be fair, Ronan died because of an Infinity Gem, and we saw with Red Skull that technically that might not mean he's dead. So
that's true. Comic books, damn it, or just movies in general. Matt, what did you think of Ronan, and or anything else that anybody's brought up in the last little bit?
Boy, he looked weird, right? Like, he was missing some sort of face paint or something. Like, he needed to do that weird blood dip that he did in that movie, because, like, he looked awkward just being a Bloomin'. Someone turned to me and was like, hey, was that the same actor? And I was like, I think it was. I don't know. Like, I mean, they're in their right to choose a different actor, since it's, you know, 20, 30 years in the past.
Right.
But still, like, felt weird. Like, I don't know, man. Like, does anyone want to see that? A Captain Marvel v. Ronin movie set in, like, 2004?
Hey, I want some good MySpace jokes. You got plenty of room.
But, I mean, they're in space, so...
MySpace, exactly.
Sorry.
Now we know where it came from.
Some other things I
want to... Tom was a Skrull the entire time.
Oh, man. That would be the ultimate joke right there. Another thing that I appreciated that I forgot to bring up in the first half, I did appreciate that there was no love story in this at all, that they didn't feel like they had to do that, which would have been very problematic with the first time the Marvels kind of had that female lead. I'm glad they didn't go down that route. Also, question about just kind of being nitpicky here, but... I guess since it's a Marvel film, we're supposed to just kind of turn off a lot of, like, logic and, like, science with stuff, because that seemed problematic when they had all those humans in that, like, that aircraft that turned into a space shuttle that was out in space and oxygen and gravity and things. I don't know. I'm sure somebody could pick that apart. The only part that I thought was funny was that they're like, oh, we can just hit this button and then that's going to solve everything, and then we're good. Don't worry about them that don't have masks and suits on.
Hey, the Skrulls was a science man. He did it. He did a thing to it for that,
He scienced the hell out of it. Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, I guess. Yeah.
I didn't really bother me that much. Not nearly as much as the Captain Marvel color-changing suit, which, how in the hell did that girl know what she was touching on that wrist thing?
I mean, did she?
I mean, she was doing some stuff with her fingers and it was changing colors. And I don't know how any of that was supposed to be done. Like, I just remember watching that and being like, how does she know what to do with that thing? Like, I don't, how does even Captain Marvel know what to do with that thing? That thing seems complicated as all hell.
Dude, she was picking stuff up and knew everything about everything the entire movie. There was no like, oh, I know how to use this immediately.
I mean, those are real, really silly nitpicks, but just a couple things that I kind of raised my eyebrow at as I was watching it. Any other things that you want to bring up, Amanda, spoiler or not, little things that you haven't had a chance to talk about yet? The floor is yours.
Oh, just the way that the music went with some of these fight scenes also was just great. I loved it. Super appreciated it.
All right, Matt, any other questions that we didn't get to of yours or other things that you would like to bring up?
Nah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's more questions, but I've asked enough.
Dan?
No, I think I'm good. Okay. I mean, that's about it.
What about the getting into the end credit scenes just a little bit? Just quick comments on that and kind of how you like that. I know some people are having major problems with the fact that they felt like Captain Marvel was acted different in that sequence than the rest of the film, but I think that's how taking context completely out of the question.
Didn't speak. How did she act different?
Yeah, I don't get that argument at all, but Dan, what was your general take from the end credit sequence?
Oh, she said, where's Fury? That's like two lines. It's 20 years in the future, so.
And a little more tense of a situation.
Yeah, she doesn't know who those people are, and half the galaxy just disappeared. So it's kind of, I mean, I don't know. I didn't necessarily, it did feel different. The thing actually reminded me of, it was when, I think it was Thor Dark World, I forget, the one where, it was before Guardians, and it was the one that James Gunn did, they go to the Collector, and I can't remember, I think it's Thor Dark World, and it did feel very different directed wise, and that did as well, and I believe the end scene was a Russo Brothers, and I did feel like that scene's probably going to be in the next Avengers movie. It's probably just taken lifted right from it, so it did have a different look to it, but I thought it was effectively directed, just like how she suddenly appears. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, her hair is straight. Is that what people are? I don't know.
Such a silly argument from people. Amanda, did that do enough to get you ready? Because obviously a lot of these characters, we've had so many films that we've seen them in, that we know the characters, we know them well, and we know what part they play in this end game that's coming up. But with Captain Marvel, was this film enough so that you're bought into that character as being part of this whole thing as well?
I mean, it wasn't those teaser clips that we saw in Batman versus Superman of the Justice League.
Wow, found a way to bring that in.
You know, I it made me excited for Endgame a lot more.
All right, Matt, last thoughts on the end credits before we wrap this thing up. What did you think, and how do you feel like, are you ready for her to be a part of this whole Endgame scenario?
Yeah, dude, like I said, she's my favorite Justice League. Thanks, Amanda. I mean, I like her more than anyone from the Justice League movie, I'll tell you that much. Jeez, that movie. She's my favorite leader of the Avengers, and I enjoyed when she did lead the Avengers. And so, like, I mean, I'm here for her being here, finally. I'm excited. I don't, like, there's nothing to comment about the end credits scene. Like, nothing happened. It was like Captain America was like, hey, I don't know what this is, but Fury had it, and then she's there, and then the credits rolled. Like, what are you talking about?
I guess enough to whet some people's appetite, though, just to see her alongside of those other individuals kind of back on Earth, because maybe some people weren't quite sure how that was going to happen, but I don't know. The people try to read into that stuff a lot, and you got to realize one of them's going to tease a next film, and one of them's going to be a little funny moment, and that's all there is to it. So
yeah, I mean, it's been that. I mean, they even had like the end one hasn't been a serious,
right?
Like movie since I don't know, since Phase 2, I think. So
right. All right, so that is our review of Captain Marvel. Seemed like positive for most people, maybe a little bit lukewarm for Amanda. Kind of middle of the road Marvel film for most of us if we were doing our rankings, which I don't think I have not done. Amanda, I know you have not done. Oh, maybe she has. In her
I
sleep.
Haven't.
No. Okay.
I have. Mine's on Letterboxd if people want
to check. Yes, so go check Dan's out on Letterboxd. Definitely interact with that. And next time, actually, we're going to have another movie review probably coming up for you next week because Amanda and I are going to be seeing a film that we're going to talk about. So we'll kind of keep that under wraps until we drop that on everybody. But that's it for this week. We're also going to be getting back into our Kevin Smith retrospective. We have a few more films to go through with that, as well as maybe some other fun things along the road now that we're kind of in the swing of 2019. So if you want to interact with us, you can tweet at the show. It's at Cinema Geekcast. Or if you have a specific question or comment to one of us individually, you can do that as well. Amanda, how do they do that with you?
At Hard Candy Mandy, eyes, no lies.
Dan?
I'm at Movie Revolt.
Matt?
I'm at Fridley Sent.
And if you didn't get enough of our conversation there, you can also go take a listen to True Bromance, where Amanda and I were on the most recent episode, also talking about Captain Marvel with those two gents. So you can check that out. You can tweet me at Optimus Solo. But that does it for this week. Tune in next time for another chance to listen to the Cinema Geeks.